Odd Trails is a true paranormal podcast. If you have a story to share, send it to stories@oddtrails.com. Enjoy the show.
Forget facts. Forget logic. Forget everything that seems real. Just trust. Believe.
Phantom Visitor at the Front Door by Paige. I've been sitting on this for almost 2 years because every time I try to tell it out loud, it sounds like nothing. I can hear how it sounds when I say it. But my husband was there for part of it, and he doesn't have an explanation for it either. He's also the most annoyingly rational person I know, so that's the part that keeps me from just letting it go. We bought our house in the fall of 2022. It was built in the 1940s, up on a hill, in one of those neighborhoods where everything is a little crooked and the doors are never quite flush. We knew what we were getting into. I'm not someone who spooks easily. I grew up in a big family with lots of siblings, a loud house. I don't really notice things the way quieter people might. So the first few months were fine. Normal new house stuff, boxes everywhere, figuring out which burner on the stove runs hot, all of that. It started in February. I work from home, so I'm in the house alone most of the day. I kept hearing the front door, not open exactly, but that specific sound it makes when someone grabs the handle and pulls without turning the knob all the way, like a thud and a rattle. I checked it the first few times. Nothing. I assumed it was the cold, the frame expanding or whatever, and I mostly stopped paying attention. Then, one afternoon, I was on a call, just sitting at my desk, and I heard it again. And then I heard footsteps in the entryway, clear as anything. That particular sound of boots on the hardwood in the front hall. I actually told the person I was on the phone with to hold on for 1 second. Because I genuinely thought my husband had come home early. I walked out into the hall, and it was empty. The front door was also closed and locked. I just stood there for a minute, kind of waiting to hear something else. Nothing happened. So I went back to my call and didn't say anything about it to anyone for a few weeks. In April, our neighbor, an older woman named Doris, who's lived on the street since the 80s, came over to introduce herself properly. She brought muffins, that kind of thing. We were talking about the house, and she mentioned that the previous owner, a man named Gerald who lived there alone for about 20 years after his wife passed, she said he died in the house, which we already knew. Natural causes, in his sleep, nothing dramatic. Then she said, kind of offhand, that Gerald had a son, who used to visit every few weeks. She said you always knew when he was coming, because you'd hear him before you saw him. Big pickup truck, diesel. You could hear it from a couple blocks away. She laughed about it, said Gerald used to joke that he never needed a doorbell, because his son announced himself automatically. I didn't really think anything of it at the time. We finished our coffee, and she left. I honestly didn't connect it to anything I'd been hearing. It was a couple of days later when it came back to me. I don't even remember what made me think of it. The sound I'd been hearing wasn't a truck, but the rhythm of it, that same sequence, the door rattle and then the footsteps. I kept thinking about that part. Someone arriving, walking in like they'd done it 100 times. When I told my husband, he didn't laugh at me, which meant something. He said it was probably just a coincidence, the house settling, the sound carrying from the street, normal explanations. I try to leave it at just that. But then, and this is the part he can't really explain either, he said he was home alone one Saturday in June, and he called me while I was out running errands. He didn't even frame it as anything weird. He just said, "Hey, do you know if there's a reason the front door does that rattling thing sometimes? It keeps doing it." I asked if he thought someone was there. He said he checked twice. He still calls it a house thing, a quirk of the frame in certain temperatures. It only ever happened in the afternoons, and it stopped completely sometime around August, and it hasn't come back since. I don't know what to think. I just know that if Gerald's son used to show up in the afternoons, I hope wherever Gerald is, he got to hear it too.
"There's Something Not Human Out There" by Acceptable Border 90. I was 9 years old and living in Suriname. At the time, and probably still true today, it was a poor country with one major city and the rest of the area very rural. We lived in one of those rural areas. Can't even call it a town, really. We lived with our closest neighbor directly across from our house and the next neighbor just miles away. We also lived next to a rainforest. There's no reason for anyone to drive by our area. There's nothing but dirt road, bushes, and trees all around us. We didn't have a TV or any entertainment at the house either. My siblings and I would spend our free time reading books, playing with toys, or riding our bikes. And for years, it remained that way. A quiet place with little to no visitors. One day, I saw something that changed everything for me. Here's some background about me first. I always had experiences with ghosts as a kid, and I still do rarely as an adult. I don't seek them out. I've had my hair pulled, my legs scratched, words whispered to me when no one was around. I guess I just got used to it. These are rare occurrences, so I don't think about it too much. Anyways, I was watching the yard dogs play when I saw a guy jogging past our house on the dirt road. The dirt road leads to a dead end. I had never seen this person before. My neighbors were Indian, and they lived alone. This man was white. I asked my mom about that man. She didn't see him, and she didn't know who I was talking about. He was wearing jogging clothes. I remember he had shorts on. The dogs were guard dogs, but they didn't bark or seem to notice him. I couldn't see his face, and I didn't think too much about him until a few days later, when I saw him again, jogging on the dirt road past the house. I immediately ran to my bike and decided to follow him. Again, the dogs were quiet for some reason. I don't know why I followed him. It wasn't curiosity. I didn't tell my mom or anyone, which I usually do. I just left with my bike, going slowly behind him, probably about 12 feet away or so. I didn't hear any footsteps. When you run on a dirt road, you hear something. Gravel, dirt, anything. I didn't. He didn't turn around. He didn't acknowledge me, even though I was obviously behind him, following very closely. I should have turned back. What was wrong with me at that time? I don't know, I just couldn't stop myself. Something was telling me to keep following him. We both didn't say anything to each other. We made it to the dead end of the dirt road. He kept running into the grass and straight towards the trees. The grass was tall, about mid-thigh to hip height. There weren't any sounds or any rustling. The grass barely bent around him as he trampled through. He just kept going. I got off of my bike. As I was about to take a step forward onto the grass to follow him, I heard my mom's voice to my left, loud and clear. She was calling my name, Maggie. I turned around and said, "What?" Nobody was there. No one was behind me. I turned back, facing forward. The man was gone too, no trace of him. I was completely alone. I felt a deep chill inside and immediately hopped on my bike and rode home as fast as I could. When I got home, my mom was cooking. She had never left the house, and I never saw that man again. I truly believe that thing was not human. I believe I was charmed somehow, lured out of my house on purpose. It wasn't a ghost or spirit. Some entities in this world can't be understood or explained. I hope I never run into it again. Decades later, I met with a psychic medium who told me that there is a guardian spirit protecting me, an older woman. But I don't think it's my late great-grandmother. I'm not sure how much of that's true, but something snapped me out of it and saved me, and I'm forever grateful for it. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. Every true crime story has money somewhere in the mix. The motive, the pressure, the moment everything goes wrong. Financial stress pushes people to desperate decisions, and a lack of financial literacy is what makes people, especially kids and teens, easy targets. Teaching your kids about money isn't just smart parenting, it's protection. Here's the thing, hand them cash and it's a total blind spot. Open a standard bank account and you might see transactions later, but you can't set spending limits or block risky merchants. By the time you spot trouble, the money's already gone. You're always reacting, never playing defense. Greenlight works differently. It's a debit card and app for families, and it's more than just a money tool. You get real-time notifications the second your child swipes their card. You can set spending controls by store categories and see exactly where your money is going. Parents can send money quickly, track transactions, and assign chores while kids learn to save and build real confidence with money. And Greenlight goes beyond money. Parents can get place alerts when kids come and go from school or home. Driving safety features help you spot risky behavior behind the wheel, with crash detection if something serious happens. And if your child ever feels unsafe, SOS alerts make sure help is just a tap away. Here's what should really stop you, though. Scams targeting teens have tripled. Every transaction without your visibility is an opportunity for fraud or identity theft. That's why Greenlight also helps families with credit, identity, and dark web monitoring that alerts you before a problem gets bigger. The habits forming right now become permanent ones. Join millions of parents and kids already using Greenlight, the number one family and finance safety app. I only wish Greenlight was around when I was a kid. I had to learn the hard way. Every day that they're handling money without guidance is a missed opportunity. Start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/trails. Don't wait to teach your kids real-world money skills. That's greenlight.com/trails to get started. greenlight.com/trails.
Maybe it wasn't such a nice gesture by Jessica. I went over to my fiancé's parents' dinner for last night. A few weeks back, he and I got into a discussion about Ouija boards. He smiles and tolerates my interest in the odd and paranormal, even though he doesn't really believe it. He mentioned that his mother had a very old Ouija board that belonged to his grandmother, and he sent her a message asking if she knew where it was, that I'd love to see it. She did not disappoint, and had it waiting on the counter when we arrived. I was fascinated and so enamored with it. She gave it to me for my oddities collection. It was in beautiful condition, save a little wearing on the corners. The planchet was plastic, so I couldn't really guess its age. But if she was 70 and it was her mother's, it had to be old. We come home and I happily sit down at the table. I don't know a ton about Ouija boards, but but I felt pretty sure I was supposed to leave the planchet sitting on the board, so I separated it by placing it on the shelf with my scrolls. The night continues, and he and I are sitting on the couch talking. I hear a little noise coming from the office, which I can see a quarter of from my vantage point. It's hard to explain, but it made me think of plastic. I glanced at the unmoved planchet and disregarded it. Just a few minutes later, I hear a loud dragging sound, followed by a bang. In my living room, I have built-in shelves that hold my more polite trinkets. There's an Edison-style lantern that has a metal casing around it. It was now laying in the middle of my living room floor. We stared at each other for a while, wide-eyed. Comparing notes, we agreed that the lantern didn't fall by gravity. It was dragged across the shelf first. You could undeniably hear that. We sat in stunned disbelief, struggling for an explanation, when I heard footsteps upstairs. Thinking it was either my youngest son defying bedtime or the dogs about to wake him, I went to investigate. When I opened the door, all three were snuggled next to one another, fast asleep. I decided to take the board with me to work the next day to show a friend of mine. He's Wiccan and does some medium work. I gave him no background, but his assessment gave me chills. The first thing he said was, "Well, whatever it is, really wants to communicate. They didn't close out the last conversation." He proceeded to point out that the planchet was not the original. It had been replaced at some point, and the lens had been deliberately removed. He showed me the stress points in the plastic where it had been pried out. Apparently, the lens is what needs to be destroyed if something bad comes through, not the actual board. He said he thinks this board was used by a woman, alone. She used it as amusement, and maybe even for advice or venting, when something attached to her and became her protector. Looking at me, his voice dropped in tone, slightly, and he said, "It's already decided to do that for you." My racing thoughts became still. When the lantern was pushed off the shelf, we were fighting. My fiancé was yelling at me, and the commotion made him stop. In fact, in the strangeness of it all, he forgot the argument altogether. What kind of gift did his mother give me?
"I Have Always Been a Non-Believer" by Ina. I've always been a non-believer. The creaking of the stairs is just the house settling. The door opening all by itself is just the wind. Ghosts certainly are not real, and everything could be explained away with science. My husband is the opposite. As you can imagine, this makes having a conversation with me difficult, as I tend to point out the scientifically disproved elements in his recounts of the paranormal activities. The mind can be so powerful. It can make you see things that aren't there. Sometimes it can make you believe that you had experiences that you hadn't. It would typically lead to arguments, so we generally avoided the topic. It was late at night, and I was home alone with just my 3-month-old son and our dog. It was the first time I had been alone, just him and me, as my husband went to visit a family member who had fallen ill. I assured him that I would be all right, as our perfect baby had already been sleeping through the night for an entire week, and I was expecting the same for that evening. After giving him a warm bath under the watchful eye of our golden retriever, I placed him in his bassinet in his bedroom upstairs and turned on his sound machine. I had been far in the depths of postpartum depression, but this evening I felt refreshed, somewhat like myself. I decided to bake. I could have taken the time to do a few loads of laundry or clean the house a bit, but I wanted to prioritize something that gave me enjoyment before I had a child. I had been an hour into my no-knead bread recipe and had just finished up washing the dishes when I noticed it had gotten eerily quiet. I decided to check on the baby, but was reassured when I heard the faint sound of the sound machine before I even got to the landing of the staircase. It was only a few minutes later that I had realized I hadn't taken the baby monitor with me, and I hadn't been checking on him at all. I rushed up to his room, assuring myself that everything was fine. When I got to the top of the stairs, I had a choice between going left into his room and going right into our bedroom, where the baby monitor was sitting on my nightstand. I chose not to risk waking him up and quietly grabbed the baby monitor and its charger and ran back downstairs. The smell of the freshly baked bread and the warmth of the oven were already filling the entire downstairs, bringing me back to the days when my worries were different. I was feeling great. I turned the baby monitor on, set it on the counter nearby, and went back to packing the dishwasher. Once the house had gone silent again, I settled at the kitchen table with a warm cup of tea. I heard the faint hush of the sound machine going shh, echoing through both the baby monitor and from upstairs when I noticed that it was beginning to get interrupted. The sound was going in and out. Naturally, I assumed it was my son fussing, so I turned to look at the baby monitor and nearly dropped my mug. I saw two glowing eyes staring back at me in the night vision, which was the default setting on the monitor. This was not my son. This wasn't the stance of a three-month-old who had just gained the strength to hold up his own neck. This was something or someone else. The eyes continued to stare into the monitor unblinking. The mouth was agape and seemed to be drooling. I could almost make out the shoulder blades. They were tense and rigid, so much so that they were visible behind its head. The more I examined it, the less I was able to explain it away. No one had been in or out of that house. There were no eerie, unaccounted sounds disturbing us that night. Even the dog was sleeping peacefully on the kitchen floor right near the warm stove. The disconnect between what my eyes were seeing and the logic in my brain was growing further and further. I sat frozen for longer than I would like to admit. After all, what kind of mother would let fear take over when her child was possibly in danger? When I snapped out of it, I bolted up the stairs with my golden retriever not too far behind me and swung open the door to see absolutely nothing. My son was peacefully sleeping, still swaddled in the same position I had put him down in after his evening bath. My dog whined at the doorway, something he did often, knowing full well he wasn't allowed in the baby's room. I watched the dog as he watched the room. One of the things my husband tried to unconvincingly assure me of is that animals have a keener sense when something paranormal is present. But nothing about his behavior raised any alarms. He was whining. But he didn't seem afraid. Still, the room felt uneasy. I leaned in closer to my son and looked back into the baby monitor, seeing only my movements reflecting in the screen just half a second later. The child was breathing normally. He wasn't unusually warm. There was no extra drool, not even a hair out of place. Everything seemed to be the way that it should. Still aware that any movement would wake him, I brought my pillow and blanket into his room and attempted to sleep on the floor that evening. I couldn't forget those glowing eyes, the animal-like stance, and the icy feeling in my veins when I couldn't logically explain what I was looking at. I had heard that interference from other electronics in the neighborhood was a possibility with these machines, and I kept reminding myself of that whenever I heard a random creak or sound that evening. As I said, I'm a non-believer.
On this show, we hear from people all the time who had no idea what was really going on around them. Something was off and they just accepted it as normal. And you know what? A lot of people do the same thing with their mattress. I can't fall asleep. I'm always in pain. That's just life. Well, maybe it is, but once I found a mattress that's right for me, and that's medium firm for those who are wondering, I've been kicking myself to sleep ever since. That's a good thing, by the way. I came across Ghost Bed not too long ago, and once I started looking into them, it clicked. Must be in the name. Ooh, so appropriate. They're a family-run business with over 20 years in the industry. Mattresses handcrafted in the USA and Canada, and over 100,000 reviews from real customers. And a lot of them say the same thing. One person put it this way: I didn't realize how bad I was sleeping until I got my Ghost Bed. Another said, I used to wake up 3 to 4 times a night. Now I sleep through the night without a single problem. The second one gets me every time. People just assume that's how they sleep. Every Ghost Bed mattress is built with cooling materials, and it's not an add-on you have to pay extra for. If you're not sure which mattress is right for you, head to ghostbed.com/trails and take their mattress quiz. Answer a few questions about the way you sleep, and you'll get your personalized mattress recommendation. With Ghost Bed, you get fast, free shipping, and you've got 101 nights to try out your mattress. If it's not the right fit, you get your money back. Plus, right now you can take advantage of spring sale pricing, and code TRAILS gets you an extra 10% off when you upgrade your sleep with Ghost Bed, the makers of the coolest beds in the world. That's ghostbed.com/trails. Code TRAILS for an extra 10% off site-wide. Some exclusions apply. See site for details. The Man in the Red Sweater by Jack. This experience happened when I was 10. My family went on a trip with some friends in Pittsboro, North Carolina. As we entered the Airbnb, I got this vibe that felt off. Not threatening, just weird. I was told that the house was built in the 1860s. Maybe that had something to do with it. I brushed it off and went about my day. Later that evening, the family we were with invited some of their friends over for a barbecue. A pair of those friends were actually the owners of the house. I hung out for a while and eventually went to bed, while everyone else stayed up late. Nothing too exciting. But in the morning, I woke up and started to walk down the stairs. Then I paused. Ahead of me, I saw a man in a 1920s era red and white striped sweater. His hair was brownish red and messy. He also had extremely blue eyes. I remember thinking, why would anyone wear a sweater in September? It's 80 degrees. I brushed it off, and I assumed it was one of the people visiting from the night before. But when I got to the bottom of the stairs, I saw him again. He was sitting in the rocking chair on the wraparound porch, staring out into the woods. But the door was closed, and I never heard it open. When everyone else woke up, I asked why one of the people visiting had stayed the night. They all said no one did. Who was the man in the red shirt then? I asked. My mom's blood ran cold. Unbeknownst to me, she had asked the owner the night before if the house was haunted. The owner told her, "Yeah, it's haunted. I've heard him. I felt him. But I've never seen him." My mom asked, "How do you know he's male?" The owner said that a couple of years earlier, they had friends over for dinner who brought their 8- or 9-year-old kid. The kid had been running around, talking to what looked like nothing. When they asked if he had an imaginary friend, he said, "No, I'm talking to the man in the red shirt." After my mom told me that, I froze. My dad and our family friend's husband both said they had heard pots clinging in the kitchen at around 5 a.m. that morning, each thinking the other family was awake. I've heard that the veil is thinner for children than adults. Did that other kid and I actually see the ghost who haunts that house?
Little Beings by Electrical Board 405. This happened in late June of 98. I haven't told but a few people this story because of the stigma around the subject. I'm hoping that here, maybe someone else has encountered what happened to me. It was West Central Texas in the middle of nowhere on a ranch where I worked. It was the end of the day, early evening, and I was on horseback, headed to my truck to load up and head out. I had come through a separate part of the ranch that day. I had misunderstood where we were working. This ranch has several sections. I had trained the horse that I was on, and he was as bulletproof as you could get. He didn't spook, held cattle, and I could step off of him. Great animal. As I was riding back to the truck, I was trying to cover some ground because it was going to be dark by the time I got there. There was still some light as I crossed this brushy creek. As I was coming up to the other side, my horse started to spook and blow. That was odd for him. As I said, he didn't do that. I gigged him and then smooched at him and made him crash through the brush and come up the embankment. I had my pistol and my rifle. I figured maybe hogs or coyotes were on the other side. We came to the top of the embankment and cleared the brush. I had my hand on my side piece, not knowing what to expect. As we cleared the brush, there were two beings. That's the best word I can come up for them. They were just standing there. They looked like children, but they weren't right. The arm and leg proportions to the body were off, and the face, well, the eyes were bigger, and the mouth was smaller. But they still looked like kids, 3.5, maybe 4 feet tall. I was told in my head not to grab my weapon. There is no danger. Now, it wasn't my voice telling me that, and it wasn't them talking with their mouths. I moved my hand away and my horse was having a fit, snorting and rearing. I noticed as I spun him around to leave that what looked like a windbreaker suit, which they were wearing, changed to an almost fire suit-looking material, shiny but stuck to them like a wetsuit. They were standing next to a big rock, but it didn't match the others in the area. It was out of place. As I was leaving, my horse took off at full force without me telling him to. I could feel him trembling the whole time we were looking at these things. It was just an odd encounter where we stood there staring at each other, not knowing what to expect from the other. I'll be honest, not much really scares me, but the primal fear I felt that evening is something that I've never felt before or since. It took about 3 days for my horse to settle down to where I could ride him again. He'd jump and spook at noises and things moving fast. I went back the next day on a different horse to that spot. The boulder wasn't there. There were marks on the ground, but the tracks didn't have any identifying markers, just smooth, small footprints, nothing defining. I asked the other hands if they had heard or seen anything odd that night or that week. They all said no. I don't know if anyone else has encountered them or not. Hey, I want to tell you about a podcast called Unmarked, a true crime podcast. It's not a recap show. It's built from interviews, documents, and primary sources. real conversations with people most of us never get access to. Some of the episodes include direct conversations with figures connected to the cases, including Charles Manson and Robert Picton. And you're going to want to hear those stories, trust me. You're not just hearing the story, though. You're hearing from the people inside of it. It's serious, investigative storytelling focused on what actually happened, not just the mythology. If you like true crime that's grounded in real evidence, this one's for you. Listen to Unmarked, a true crime podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's kick it off with some interesting feedback from Sophia. She says, "Guys, honestly, when I listen to the end of your episodes, I'm giggling my head off. Brandon, you are the king with the acknowledgments. It sounds so warm yet sarcastic at the same time, which makes me laugh, but at the same time melts my heart that you're both just so relaxed in this chat together, as if there's no audience, just two friends sharing their life experiences. Love the recent Animaniacs references. Go back and rewatch the Chicken Boo. It aged well." Wow. Well, thanks.
Yeah, I always took it as you and I have these little cues of acknowledging what the other person says so that they know we're listening, but we don't have a decent response. We just accept it. It's either or yes. That's what we say to each other.
Oh, yeah. And it's worse over text because I feel like I'm being cold and rude, but I also don't want to force myself to think of something substantial to say, but I don't have anything to say. So it's just KK, to be more playful, I guess.
But we have openly acknowledged that we both do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with Chicken Boo. Chicken Boo does hold up. It's funny. All of those extra Animaniacs characters, like I was saying, they're great. IDK says, "This is random, but I was exploring an abandoned farmhouse, and there was this creepy sealed-off room in the second-story closet, and there was a door that led to nothing in the kitchen. But that one could have been from a weird renovation." Yeah, this actually spurred a memory for me of a story that I read about. There was this couple in Wales, and they were renovating their house. And while they were working in the kitchen or the pantry area, I can't remember which one, they discovered this small hidden door behind a cupboard or in the floor. And they just expected like a cellar or like a standard Victorian storage space. But the opening actually led to this massive stone-walled chamber that was bigger than their entire house. And this happened in Pembroke, which turns out a lot of modern homes were built directly on top of the town's original foundation from the medieval period. And the room that they found looks like it could have been used as either a merchant cellar from the 1400s or even a torture chamber, because it's hard to distinguish between the two because they both coexisted and they were built the same way. So their house was very, very well could have been built on top of a torture chamber from the medieval period. So you never really know what you're going to find in your home, especially in a place with so much history, like in Wales.
Yeah, and talk about a good bump in the real estate for the square footage or the square meterage, because I know not everybody uses feet, but man, that's kind of cool in a sense. Even though it could have been a torture chamber, you could do a lot with that.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. They just added so much value to their home.
Yep, just like that.
Yeah. Let's see. JH says, "People have proven that Fruit of the Loom did have a cornucopia and Monopoly Man did have a monocle. I think the beings that run this planet don't want you to believe your eyes and memories so that they can easily manipulate you when the time is right." I'd go ahead and ask you, what beings are you talking about and what are you basing this on? Because that just seems like a theory. That just seems like an idea. And if we're going off of theories, there is a theory that I like from Reddit where somebody stated that the Fruit of the Loom company loves the publicity from people denying the cornucopia logo ever existed. And they use the Mandela effect to their advantage to draw more attention to their products. So they kind of play into it.
So I'm actually kind of on board with what they were saying, that end theory there about how they think that the beings that run this planet don't want us to believe our eyes and memories, because something as simple as a cornucopia in a logo or whatever the case may be, we can talk about the different types of Mandela effects. But if we can get gaslit into the most minor things, think about the more important things and the different sort of psyops that can happen after that. So it's not too far off base.
Yeah, and you actually see that in
every day.
Current times.
Yeah.
And what's crazy is a lot of these Mandela effects, they are almost all related to popular culture. It's always books, advertisements, company logos, TV shows, movies. It's the media, really, and it's advertising.
I think it makes sense only because what else, what other common denominators really are there for a whole society to take notice of? But yeah, with like history and things like that, I guess we do see it mostly in media and advertising. So yeah.
Well, I guess it is all based on an actual event, not media or advertising. It is Nelson Mandela.
Right, yeah. Rest in peace, I think.
At this point, I don't know.
Yeah, I know. It's so weird.
Yeah. Taylor from Discord said, to wrap things up, who would die first in a horror movie and how would they get you? And I just want to go on record saying, I already know the answer. It would be you, Brandon. I'm sorry. you take more risks than I do. Everything is a bad idea to me. I've always been that way. This is a bad idea. I don't think we should do this. Let's climb the side of this building. No, I think that's a bad idea. I don't think that we should do this. I've always been that way. So I feel like I would avoid even being in that situation just because I wouldn't even allow myself to do something that would facilitate a horror movie scenario.
That much is true. Yes, I will give you that. But I think once push came to shove and we had to like physically fight or something, assuming it could even work that way, then yeah, maybe I'll whip out my Jeet Kune Do and Jiu-Jitsu from back in the day and have some sort of luck. But ultimately, you're right. I don't think you would put us in a situation that's avoidable to where we would be fighting for our lives to begin with. So fair.
Yeah, we would both be the ones that survive in the different scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
It all depends on the scenario.
It all depends.
There were a lot of questions on Discord this week because I asked everybody if they had anything they wanted to ask us. However, the majority of the questions were stuff that we've already answered in the past, but this one was new. I don't think I ever saw this one.
That's a good one.
All right, let's jump into one of your stories.
Sure. Well, how about The Man in the Red Sweater by Jack.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really cool one. I'm a big fan of the Airbnb stories for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just the idea of staying somewhere where multiple people have stayed throughout whatever time frame. But
yeah,
I think this one works because it's just so simple and consistent. It wasn't really over the top, just a kid seeing someone who clearly shouldn't be there and brushing it off as something normal. But it's just another case of kids being able to see stuff that we can't. And
mm-hmm.
Not only did Jack see the man in the red sweater, but at a completely different time, not a stranger, but another kid saw the same thing. So it creates this stronger corroboration. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, I agree. It kind of reminded me, or didn't even remind me, it just made me think of The Shining for some reason, the red striped sweater with the apparition. It was very Kubrick-esque in my head, but I have just been watching a lot of Kubrick lately, so that could be what it is. But it is also something like a place from the 19th century. So what we know from current pop culture with haunted locations, the older, the more haunted.
Right. Yeah. And it's interesting that they mentioned the sweater being from the 1920s and the house is from the 1860s. So I will admit, initially I was thinking, wait a minute, that doesn't line up. But let's be fair. The person who died there, who was wearing the sweater, could have died when he was around 50 or so. So I felt a little silly with that little, wait a minute.
No. I would have thought the same thing. But like, yeah, like why it should have been somebody who died in the 1860s. They would have been a baby or it would have been just like a brand new house. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
That's funny.
It also makes me think, what if we've seen ghosts as kids without realizing it? Like something super routine that wouldn't really stick out in our minds, you know, going through Home Depot and seeing a ghost at the checkout, and we'd have no idea. It wasn't anything we would think twice of, a very passive moment that we would have no idea and never will know.
That's a good point. That's interesting. I like that.
Thanks. I like it too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes. Thanks. Yes. That's why I said it. Moving on, let's hear from you. What do you have to say?
Well, I don't have anything else to say about your story, but I did have some notes on mine. The story from Maggie about the non-human thing or whatever they saw.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't decide if this is some kind of spirit trying to lure little Maggie into the forest, or if this is similar to the idea that we've touched on recently about ghosts possibly being stuck in some kind of loop, you know?
They are.
Forced to constantly repeat the same task over and over again, and that's what we end up seeing, you know, attached to one specific location, hence our red striped sweater guy. Maggie did say that she saw the entity on two separate occasions. She spotted him jogging past the house and then asked her mom about him, and her mom didn't see him, didn't know what she was talking about. Then a few days later, he appeared again, which is when she grabbed her bike and followed him. Technically, I guess it fits both concepts. It could be a ghost stuck in a loop because she saw it twice and it was repeating the same thing. It was almost identical. But it also could be a spirit luring Maggie into the forest. I'm not sure. I'm kind of leaning more towards ghost stuck in a loop.
I think that's solid. Why else would they stay here, you know, if they can't cross over to the next side? They must be repeating the same thing because that's all they know. That's all they can do until maybe they're eventually able to cross over. I think the most unsettling part isn't just the figure. It's how there really isn't any sort of physical cue, you know what I mean? No sound, no reaction from the dogs or interaction with the environment. It feels less like a person and more like, I don't know, a mimic or something trying to imitate one.
Yeah, I don't think we'll ever get an answer because Maggie didn't go into the forest. She didn't see what was out there.
Good call.
She's just like me. Maggie and I don't think this is a good idea. Let's get out of here. You, on the other hand, what would you do?
I would run in, guns a-blazing with my machete, yeah, GoPro would. On my head and everything.
Yeah, you would. Yeah, the voice calling her name at the exact moment when she's about to step into the grass, that was weird.
Yeah.
You know.
Good timing.
Was that psychological or not? Was that this guardian angel that, you know, she was told about later on in life? Who knows? But nonetheless, I'm still sticking with the ghost in a loop.
Let's do it. Let's loop those ghosts around. I don't know what that meant. That just sounded natural. Forget sure. I said that. Let's keep it in, though.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. Understood. Understood. Well, how about The Phantom Visitor at the Front Door by Paige? Cool name. Paige Michaelchuk Degrassi.
Yeah.
I always think of that.
Me too.
For me, the detail that makes it really stick out is how the husband experiences it independently. Mm-hmm. I love the independent corroboration. It just sort of takes out the in your head category a bit, or writes it off at least. So it's subtle enough that you just can't explain it, but weird enough that something doesn't sit right. I really don't know what to make of it. I also wonder why it stopped in August. Maybe the son could have stopped visiting her after the household.
I was thinking the same thing. Yeah. Or Gerald finally heard the footsteps and didn't need to replay it anymore.
No more loop for Gerald.
Yeah. The loop's over. Yeah, ghost stuck in a loop.
Hey, there's another band name for us.
Anyways, I do want to touch on the other stories that I read this week, specifically the one about the baby monitor by Ina.
Yeah.
So this is great. We have another baby monitor horror story to add to the pool. Definitely one of the creepier ones at that. But here's the thing. The author clearly states in the beginning of the story that I find this interesting. She believes that the brain can play tricks on people and cause them to see things that aren't there. She's clearly a skeptic, yet she felt compelled enough as a skeptic to write the story and put it online. Now, this makes me believe that she was scared beyond her own skeptical brain, beyond her own beliefs. It's kind of like she wanted this to be a figment of her imagination, and she just can't accept it because it was so real and jarring. And that makes me more inclined to believe this story. You know, I like it when a skeptic sends in a story rather than somebody who's already wrapped up in the world of the paranormal and the supernatural, because it's far more compelling personally.
Yeah, for sure. And she's not trying to sell it. She's actively pushing back on it the whole time. And it makes that moment with the monitor hit a lot harder when she can't exactly explain it away anymore. So it's one of those, oh, maybe I'm not a skeptic after all. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it's one of the creepiest part is even just the eyes. It's how specific the thing looked on the screen. And then there's just nothing in the room, that sort of disconnect. Spooky stuff.
I was in my head what I was seeing when she read the description of the thing with like the hunched over shoulder blades and the glowing eyes and the gaping mouth. I just immediately thought of like one of those super low budget, straight to DVD B horror movies from the 2000s. You know, the covers would always have like that Paranormal Activity style shot of some, you know, like the scary zombie thing at the end of Rec, mm-hmm. or REC, Record, whatever that movie is technically called. Like that, I just imagined the cover of a movie from the 2000s.
Like a bad CGI type of thing?
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Knock off Nosferatu.
Yeah. 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 Mm-hmm. Yeah. Before we wrap up, I want to touch on that story about those little beings. So
yeah, cute.
The only reason I really want to talk about this is because I learned some horse vernacular today reading this story.
Oh.
Yeah. Because they used a lot of terms that I had never heard. So for the more not so equestrian educated folks like myself, here's some facts about horse talk. Gigging apparently means to spur the horse along with your heel while riding. Smooching is exactly what it sounds like. It's just a cute little kissy sound to communicate a certain command to the horse. Mm-hmm. Blowing is when the horse forcefully exhales through its nose, often in short snorts. It's a sign of anxiety, alertness, or alarm. It's the horse signaling that something feels wrong. And then finally, rearing is obviously when the horse rises up on its hind legs, a sign of extreme fear or resistance. It says here it's if they see like potential danger for the rider. And yeah, that concludes a new segment of New Stuff with Andy. So there you go. We learned something this week.
I somehow knew what all of that was besides blowing. That huh. sounded funny, but yeah, I know that very well. Oh, sexual joke. Yeah, no, it was a cool story. Very matter mm-hmm. of fact about everything. No hype, just describing what happened. But I think the part that really sticks out is how there is this mix of control and fear. Something telling him not to grab his weapon while his horse is completely losing it, or yeah. known as blowing, I suppose.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, he saw aliens. The boulder was, it looked like it didn't belong there. And then when he went back the next day, the boulder was gone. So maybe that was some kind of hologram, like hiding the ship. It kind of made me think of how in cartoons you see like something in the background, it's painted like a slightly different color. And you know that's yeah. the thing that's going to move or get broken right. or something. In the cartoon.
I don't know why they do that. It's so, like, they don't have to, but they do. I don't know. I'm sure there's a reason for it.
I have a friend. That's always weird to say. My friend Gus, we actually did a short podcast together about the Disney Afternoon, and he was telling me exactly why they do that in animation, and I can't remember why.
Oh, well, good story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for sharing. Mm-hmm.
Yes, mm-hmm. Affirmative.
Yeah. Yeah. I do want to go back to Texas, though. I feel like I didn't explore nearly enough when I lived there. I hear like the Marfa area is really good for paranormal stuff.
Well, just jump on American Truck Sim with me and we'll do a convoy. I've been waiting.
All right. I have my wheel right here. I almost reached over and picked it up to show you, but that'd be the equivalent of saying, I had a friend who told me something, but I don't remember what.
Yeah, if you have any questions or concerns or you just want to complain about something, yeah, send us an email at stories@oddtrails.com or just give us some feedback on Spotify, and you can jump on our Discord. The link will be in the show notes. We love to hear from you guys. It spurs our conversations here at the ends of the episodes. And yeah, we enjoy it. Make sure you sign up for our Patreon at patreon.com/oddtrails to get ad-free versions of all of our episodes at a higher bitrate. And check out the new episodes of my other podcasts, Let's Not Meet and the Old Time Radio Cast. See you next week. Stay safe.
Peace out.
And the ghouls disturb you, darling.